Hello, my babies, and welcome to Poker in the Ears. I'm Uncle Daddy, Joe Stapleton. My work wife over there, he's James Hardigan.
Happy International Bat Appreciation Day, Joe, and I feel like I'm starting to repeat these. I think it's been a couple of years where I've been digging out these random days from the internet, and I fear that I'm running out. I fear that I'm just churning out the same tired material year after year.
Some days have like 8 days, right? Like some days it's like International Cake Day, International Kiss Your Uncle Day, International whatever. So if we've done this one before, my question would be, because I always do, my brain goes to the same place, even if I don't remember, is it bat the creature or bat as in like a baton to whack things with?
Oh, no, these are the creatures with wings.
Okay, well, they're pretty... We've come to learn over the years that bats are pretty cute and pretty pretty lovely.
Yes.
So, great. Happy International Bat Day to you.
Exactly. If it is a repeat, I feel it's a worthy repeat.
Coming up on today's show, last week we brought you the news. This week we're bringing you the opinions. That's what I would have said had Will Jaffe come through and joined us on today's show.
But Joe, we advertised last week that Will was going to be the guest on this week's podcast.
I know.
We invited people to send in questions for Will Jaffe.
We very rarely do that and say definitely who next week's guest is going to be. And even more rarely, Will makes about the third person ever in the history of the show to cancel on us. Do you know why he had to cancel?
I'm hoping this is a postponement and not a hard no to any future appearances.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, he definitely was like very apologetic and said, hey, I'm so sorry, but can we postpone? And the reason was because he was playing poker. Can you believe it?
I mean, that's shocking. I mean, I thought you were going to come up with a much more exciting reason than that. But no, it's because a poker player is playing poker.
It's time to have a tough conversation with Will Jaffe about time management. Okay, moving on. We have got a stellar replacement. However, I'm just not going to ask her to stick her neck out quite as much as I was going to have Will do, because that seems to be his thing. Not exactly everyone's thing these days. It is crazy in this day and age, but we've been wanting to have her on for a while now. We've got professional poker player, commentator, and author Lexi Gavin Mather will be with us on the show today.
And just to be clear, Joe, because obviously, understandably, you used the word replacement, just to take people behind the scenes, Joe and I have our hit list of guests, and Will and Lexi were the two top names at the list. In fact, we'd gone backwards and forwards on who we were going to invite onto next week's show. So had Will come through this week, we would have invited Lexi in the coming weeks. It's not like we drafted her in because, oh God, we need someone who's available.
Absolutely, yes. Lexi been on the list since the beginning, since last year, I believe. So,
yes.
Moving on, other things on today's show. James and I have both been able to live our lives a little bit now that I've had a whole 12 days at home. I've got a fun story about a concert I went to here in Los Angeles. James, you've got a trip to Vegas coming up.
Yeah, I'm going to Vegas this weekend. I was very honest. When I had that score in the Sunday Million Anniversary, I said, I'm taking the money to Vegas. And that will happen this coming weekend. Obviously, I'm not going to put all of it on the tables, but some of it. So maybe next week, there might be a hand history or at least a bad beat story to relate.
Is there a specific event you're looking to play there? Or are you just going to play like the nightlies, whatever?
I think Aria will be the closest poker room, so I'll see what they've got on as far as a daily is concerned or maybe a 1-3 game, because I know my limits.
Yeah, well, their dailies are good, so that sounds fun. Also, this week's superfan is actually a super co-worker. Viviana Pasmino is one of the brains behind the scenes of all that streaming we did way back during the lockdowns and was responsible for making the Jake Johnson portion of our 300th episode, making sure that worked properly. But she is also genuinely a massive fan of the show. So we're going to let her take a whack at Superfan versus Stapes. Now Vivi is a huge Marvel and Star Wars nerd. So I was looking forward to whatever subject she chose, but she picked a movie about a plane crash in the mountains, which was not boring. I thought it might have been boring. It wasn't boring, but it was fucking rough. So more on that later. James, I don't know if you know this or not. You probably do because you remember stuff. I don't. It wasn't until I was on Twitter yesterday that I realized that it was the anniversary of Black Friday on Monday.
Yeah, it's not a particularly big one. What is it, the 13th anniversary?
But for some reason, everyone was sharing all their Black Friday stories. And I will say there were a couple of interesting ones if you guys want to check them out. Cole South, I don't know if you remember him from way back in the day. He's not really anymore. He wrote about his Black Friday experience and about the both good and bad that came of it from him. And Dan Zak, who's made waves the last couple years and won a bunch of stuff, had a pretty interesting Black Friday story and about playing responsibly, about how Black Friday kind of stopped him from going down a path that was a losing path for him.
Interesting. I tell you what isn't interesting is that our Discord has now become hijacked by Trekkies following your conversations about Star Trek TV series of recent weeks. And it reminded me of when Francine banned Star Trek being discussed on the show. Maybe she's unaware of the fact that it has made a reappearance in recent weeks, and maybe she would reapply that ruling if she were to know.
When was Star Trek banned from the show? I don't even remember that.
This was in year one. This was when she used to listen to every single episode. And she was like, every time you guys start talking about Star Trek, I want to switch off. So stop talking about Star Trek.
Well, we can keep it to the Discord for now until there's other big Star Trek developments, like when I want to talk about Strange New World or when Star Trek 4 finally comes out. James, what have you been watching, pal? You've had some time?
I have had some time. Finally saw the Curb finale. Thought it was a great conclusion
really
to the
good.
Series.
Yeah,
sending it off in style. Because you mentioned that movie with Christian Bale and Matt Damon, the Le Mans 66 or Ford versus Ferrari, for some reason I then watched Michael Mann's movie Ferrari with Adam Driver as Enzo Ferrari, which was overall a bit dull, apart from one random moment in the movie.
It looked kind of dull,
There is a really graphic car crash with loads of dismembered bodies, which comes from nowhere, by the way, and was very out of keeping with the tone of the rest of the film. I watched Scoop, the movie on Netflix, about the interview with Prince Andrew, and apparently there's a different version of that story being made by Amazon. And I've started watching Ripley. In fact, I've only got two episodes to go, which obviously is an adaptation of The Talented Mr. Ripley, the first of Patricia Highsmith's novels. I'm assuming that they are working their way through all of the books. I think there are five Ripley books, because Andrew Scott is way too old to play this character. Now, if you get to the later books, if you get to, for example, Ripley's Game, when he's an older man, it would work. But all the information I can find, it talks about this being a limited series, which would be really weird why you'd cast someone who's my age to play someone who should be in their early 20s. But what I do like about it is it's not just shot in black and white. It's also shot in the style, both in terms of framing, editing, pace of movies and content of that era, of the early 1960s. It feels like a period piece. And Andrew Scott is excellent. He's a very good casting as Tom Ripley, or would have been, say, for example, 20 years ago. But yeah, I'm enjoying it.
So I wanted to start this. I've had a lot of time to watch stuff with my girlfriend, get to my stuff in a second. But she hadn't seen the movie. And I was wondering, is it a better introduction to the character? No, just go right into the TV show.
Yeah, absolutely. It's
because the movie's so good.
The movie is. I mean, there was another adaptation, of course, with Alain Delon from the early 1960s was the very first adaptation of The Talented Mr. Ripley. So it's not like the material hasn't been adapted before. But yes, this I think is a probably more faithful to the book than the Anthony Minghella movie. And the casting is pretty solid. As I said, if you can just look past the fact that Andrew Scott is way, way too old.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, things that I did watch were, so I watched the entire series of Fallout. They made an Amazon Prime show out of the video game Fallout, which I was a big fan of in its day. People are loving this. People are saying how great it is. I thought it was okay. I thought it was fine. I did really enjoy. So Fallout, they did the whole season. There's a whole debate now about whether Fallout should have been released week to week. If I had to wait 8 weeks to watch Fallout, I'd have been really mad, because it was another one of those. It was 8 hours. It probably should have been more like three. But there's a show on Apple TV called Sugar, where Colin Farrell plays a private eye. It's like a, it's a noir. It takes place in LA. It feels a lot like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, all the other things. It hits all the tropes, but I like it. I don't know if that's bad or if that's good. I like a tropey noir every once in a while. Yeah. So I was into that. I saw it finally. We rewatched Dune, and then we went to see Dune 2. What plot point did you miss in Dune 2? Spoilers, by the way, guys, but I want to know what you almost missed in Dune 2.
It was the line of dialogue related to Paul Atreides' heritage, as in who his grandfather
really?
Was.
Really? Okay, that's a pretty big plot
point. It's a pretty big, but it was kind of like mumbled in a very dramatic sound mix. And I'm like, so after the movie, that's why I was having to look it up. What was the connection? What's the family kind of thing there?
I didn't like this as much as I liked the first one. Now, it's probably a better movie, but it's kind of like it didn't have as many of the big action set pieces I felt like that the first one had. And the knife fighting I find to be kind of impressive, but not that. It doesn't really do it for me. So I'm looking forward to the next one. I didn't think it was bad by any means. It just didn't quite thrill me.
Yeah. I've come around to the way of thinking that I think the third one could be quite interesting. I was just disappointed because I thought this was going to be a two-parter. I thought this was going to be the conclusion of the story. And the fact that it ended with this, what I consider to be huge cliffhanger is like, oh,
massive.
I kind of felt a little bit cheated. Yeah.
So, okay, now I got to tell you about this concert I went to. This is insane. This is one of the most batshit crazy things I've ever gone to. Just for preface here, Jimmy Buffett's not really a thing in England, right?
No.
Okay, are you aware of what this phenomenon is?
I mean, this is the Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville is about as far as my knowledge goes.
So there's this like singer from the U.S. who, yes, Margaritaville is like one of it. He has like two really big hits, Margaritaville and Cheeseburgers in Paradise. But the people in America who like him are like, they're called parrot heads. They wear Hawaiian shirts. They go to see his concerts all over the world. He has a restaurant chain, a hotel chain, casinos. There is now a chain of old folks' homes called Margaritaville. And my best friend here in LA is signed up to live in this Margaritaville retirement facility.
Okay.
So these people are obsessed. So I wanted to get him a gift. I wanted to take him. I took some of my friends on a trip to Amsterdam recently, and he couldn't go. And he said, look, if you really want to get something for me, get me a ticket to this concert. So I get him a ticket to something called the Jimmy Buffett Tribute Show. As I'm there, he goes to get some wine, and I talk to the ladies next to us, and the ladies next to us are I was like, you know, I don't even really know who Jimmy Buffett is. They can't believe it. And I wouldn't know him if I fell on him. So the first song happens, a guy plays a song. Second song happens, a different guy plays a song. And I go, which of those two guys was Jimmy Buffett? And they're like, you're fucking kidding me, right? And I'm like, no. And they're like, what? You got to be joking. Turns out Jimmy Buffett died in September. I didn't even know that the guy was dead at the concert we're seeing. I know that we're kind of running out of time here, so I'm just going to rattle off what happened here. Woody Harrelson comes out, tells a story about Jimmy Buffett, introduces the Zac Brown Band. Will Arnett comes out, tells a story about Jimmy Buffett, introduces Kenny Chesney. They show an old Jimmy Buffett music video on the monitors where Jimmy Buffett's flying his private plane, and Indiana Jones comes out in the video. It's from the 80s or something. The video stops playing. Harrison Ford comes out on stage, tells a story about Jimmy Buffett, introduces the fucking Eagles.
Wow.
Who haven't played together, who like never play together anymore. It's like fucking, it's Don Henley and Joe Walsh and Glenn Frey's son. They leave the stage. Bon Jovi comes out. Pitbull comes out. Judd Apatow and Leslie Mann come out, tell a story. Snoop Dogg tells a story about Jimmy Buffett. Finally, the headliner comes out. Fucking Paul McCartney comes out.
What a gig.
And plays Let It Be by himself on stage with piano only, at which point every person I just mentioned, I'm sure I missed some of them, comes out on stage and they all sing Margaritaville together. It was one of the wildest things I've ever been. I could not believe the star power at this thing. Everyone there to honor this dude, Jimmy Buffett, who most people around the world haven't heard of.
That is incredible. That sounds like an amazing gig.
It was fantastic. Gig. It was really cool. And I think we drank four bottles of wine between the two of us. So I'm glad I remember any of it.
Just very quickly, last week, of course, we talked about the Sunday Million anniversary. This week sees the conclusion of the Sunday Million season. I do have kind of mixed feelings about this because, yes, I'm looking forward to being in Vegas, but also I will miss out on this. And I want to keep my run going in the Sunday Million. I've got to keep my 100% cash record going. So Sunday, April 21st, which is this coming Sunday, boosted guarantee in the Sunday Million of $1.5 million. Double leaderboard points if you're participating in the Sunday Million season promotion. And the winner of this week's Sunday Million is going to get a trophy. So we talk about the Sunday Million anniversary being the must-play MTT of the year. This also feels like a must-play event for those of you who will be in parts of the world where you can play it this weekend.
You lucky fucking bastards.
Okay, moving on, because it's time for the latest in our occasional series of conversations with poker players we've been meaning to speak to for ages and probably should have interviewed a long time ago. I am pleased that this week's guest has finally managed to advance from our wish list, a happy consequence of the chaos this episode was thrown into 24 hours ago. Here is a hashtag fun fact. Her first recorded cash was at the PCA in 2013. Since then, she has racked up more than $600,000 in live tournament earnings. She is a coach, content creator, and commentator. Lexi Gavin Mather, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk to you.
We're excited to talk to you, too. I guess my first question is because I just learned something about you, that first cash being in 2013. That feels relatively new to me. I know that it's 10 years ago at this point, but it kind of feels like halfway through my sort of poker career. How early in your poker career was this cash? Did this take a long time? Like, where were you at in your life when this happened?
Yeah, so it's funny because that was either the first or the second live tournament I've ever played. And both, I think my first ever live tournament was at the LAPT in Peru, where I won an online package. And so I think that this one was my second, and I happened to final table, which was completely awesome. But I was so new to live poker that like I didn't know the rules. I was very concerned about getting my change back. If I threw out like a 5K chip, I was like, dealer, like I'm going to need change here. So I had been playing full time on PokerStars. You probably didn't know this, Joe.
No.
Since 2009, I started playing full time on Stars right after I graduated from college. And after Black Friday, I did the whole, move to Canada thing with a bunch of pros and started grinding up there. I used to mass multi-table, 24 tables. And my boyfriend at the time, who was a big Stars player, won a package to the Bahamas. So he's like, come on, let's go. And you could play, you could play the ladies event. So I was like, okay. So I went, and it was a really cool experience because I got to meet Jamie Kerstetter for the first time and Maria Ho, and they were super nice off the bat. And from that point, I kind of got more hooked to live poker, not so much tournaments. I transitioned to cash after that. But it was fun. It was fun going deep in that one.
So you went to this event and sort of got to meet some people that obviously you'd heard of, and now your name is mentioned in the same breath as theirs a lot of the time. That must be pretty cool.
It is cool. It is. And I appreciate you saying that because it's kind of hard to believe that I could be in that, considered in that level of field. And I remember Maria especially was super nice. She reached out to me on Facebook and she's like, hey girl, it was nice playing with you if you ever want to hang out. So I immediately felt really accepted into that community. And I was just like, wow, this is a group of great women. And yeah, I like that my first cash was a ladies event too.
Yeah.
I don't know why, I just do.
So we don't really get into too much of the debates surrounding women's events and stuff like that. We just accept them as being good things. But as long as you are here and you've had such a positive experience, like, I assume you can speak to the fact that it's probably a pretty good way for an entry level event for women to play?
For sure. You know, when the topic is brought up about women in poker, one of the commonalities that I do hear from women is that they're intimidated to take that first step because a poker room can be a very intimidating atmosphere for women. You know, and I can relate because I remember kind of feeling a little bit intimidated when I walked into the poker room for the first time. So I get it. So I think ladies events are really good, you know, gateway to playing in mixed fields and stuff. So, yeah, I think ladies events are a great thing. I think Stars does a really good job of putting on some really nice ladies events. So yeah, I think that they're good.
I just wanted to cycle back to the start of your origin story, Lexi, because we came in at the point that you were already grinding full time on Stars. How did you get to that point?
Yeah.
How did you first discover the game, get that passion for the game, get good at the game?
Right. So I enjoyed card games at a very young age. My grandma, she actually, may she rest in peace, she passed away this year, but she taught me card games at a very early age. So she got me thinking strategically since I was a kid. And then when I went to college, I would have poker home games with my brother and our friends and everything. And I just started to develop an interest in poker. And then I was actually studying, I have a degree in political science, and I was actually supposed to go to law school. I have a degree I was studying for the LSATs. And I then met a pro who I started to date, and he just kind of showed me the world of like online poker and you know, multi-tabling. And I was at a crossroads. I was like, okay, do I continue down the law route or do I take a leap of faith and, you know, try this poker thing? And I went the poker route. Parents weren't too thrilled about that because they put me through college. But yeah, he kind of taught me how to mass multi-table. And then I got really lucky that I had a really good group of professionals, a bunch of peers of mine, Greg Merson. I was roommates with Ankush Mandavia.
Wow.
Nuts and Ho on Stars. Actually, he was my one of my ex-boyfriends, an online legend, Rich Lindeker. And just a bunch of them, Tony Gregg. We all moved up to Canada together.
That's an impressive list of names. Assuming
it was.
I don't mean to assume they were better poker players than you at the time, but you probably learned a lot from those folks.
I you know, credit them for so much of my career. Like, I was a losing player when I first started playing online. I used to mass multi-table micro stakes, you know, and I was struggling beating 5 cent, 10 cent, 10 cent, 20 cent for the longest time. And I would just sit behind them and I'd watch them and I'd be like, why'd you do that? Why'd you do that? And they would explain their thought process to me, and just seeing that amount of volume really helped me. And then, you know, they would sweat me and kind of coach me. So yeah, I was very, very lucky to get coached by some of the greatest players in the world. And yeah, I was definitely not in their league. I'm still not in their league, you know, because they're legends.
So in addition to learning a lot, it must have been fun too, right? Like, what was the lifestyle like? I mean, you lived in a grind house basically.
Yeah. Well, so, yeah. It was me and my ex. I don't know if you know Evan Jarvis.
I know the name, but I don't think I know him personally.
Yeah. 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 So I wound up moving into his house with my ex-boyfriend and Ankush and Carter Gill for a little bit. And Evan moved into Greg Merson's apartment just down the street from, we were in Toronto. And yeah, no way. Well, I did Toronto and Montreal. Now I'm trying to think where Ankush. I know Ankush lived with me in Montreal, but
isn't it weird how fallible memory is? Like how these the person that you lived with, you're like, which city was it in?
I lived with Mike Delvecchio for a little bit. Like I lived with a lot of poker players, but the lifestyle was just remarkable at such a young age. You know, I was in my early 20s. I was introduced to this world of lavish dinners and clubs and being a baller at a very young age. And I guess it was a blessing and a curse that I actually ran really good in tournaments when I first started playing online tournaments, that I like banked a $5 like hyper turbo with like 10,000 players, just like scoop that. And I don't know if it had 10,000 players. I don't really remember, but it had
probably
thousands of players.
Sounds about right.
I think I won the 109 rebuy, you know, got second in 55 nightly. So I just had a lot of success really early, and it kind of gave me a false view on poker tournaments and the grind, and like how I was just like, oh, gambling's easy. Like I can do this. Mm. I'm like up 30K in a month and I'm 22 years old. And then I discovered variance the more I played, and it was kind of a rude awakening. But then I was like, okay, I really need to study and learn how to, you know, because I was just hooked. You know, it was very fun though, very fun living with that, you know, in that environment.
Because that was actually going to be my question. In the 10 years that followed this period where you're living in places like Toronto and Montreal and playing online, has it always been? Easy is maybe the wrong word, but has there been ever any point where you're like, yeah, I probably need to do something else now? That you know, we know there comes a point where you question whether poker is a legitimate means of making money for the rest of your life.
Yes, actually, there was a very pivotal moment in my career. I was at Greg Morrison's Halloween party in Toronto in his awesome apartment, and I wound up breaking my elbow that night. Too much to
your
kill.
Poker playing elbow.
My right elbow.
Yeah,
horrible.
When I was saying, you know, there probably came a point where you considered quitting poker. It wasn't because you couldn't click a mouse anymore.
Well, so I wound up. My dad actually came up to Canada, drove me home so that I could recover in New York and go to, you know, doctors in New York, and then I was just like, oh boy, I have no income. Like I have to live outside of the country if I want to make money. And so that was a time where I was just like, is this for me? And then I discovered live poker, which is a whole nother story.
Have you ever been tempted to work in political science to use that degree? Or do you see what's going on and you're like, ah, I'm good?
Yeah, no. I considered it for a little bit, but in reality, if I had gone into law, I don't think I would have been very happy. So I'm kind of glad that I think I dodged a landmine. If I was going to do anything else, it would have to do with like nutrition and health and maybe become a nutritionist or something, because I'm very passionate about that.
But like many poker players, you have, I'm going to use that pretentious word, diversified, right? Because you've got coaching going on, you're writing about poker, you're making content, you've got your YouTube channel, for example. So at some point you realize that I need to do more, I guess, than just play.
Yeah, it's actually really nice being at the point in my career where I don't have to rely on making money at the tables. I'm more making money off of the brand. Having actual income streams from other places is really nice. And I just enjoy my career, being well-rounded with involving poker, like hosting Poker Night in America, filling Joe Stapleton's very big shoes for that one season was really a cool experience. And then writing the book and everything and coaching, it's all a lot of fun.
His feet aren't that big.
I did want to ask you about poker commentary. I wanted to ask you, like, how is your experience in doing it? And also, lots of people get in touch with me wanting to have a career in poker commentary. And I want to know what you would say if you were going to give someone that advice.
Yeah, it's great. It's a lot of fun. And you know, I also like that I got to learn while I was watching the games, because when you're watching, you know, really good players, you know, just kind of you see a different perspective. But it's a lot of fun. And I think that if someone wants to make a career out of it, then that's great. I don't know how well it, you know, would pay.
There's not like there's a lot of those jobs just floating around, and the ones that are not
it's
exactly enough to make a living on, as you probably know. I don't think that you would have survived purely on poker night salary. I certainly didn't.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't bad at all. It was just like, like you said, it's pretty saturated and it's kind of competitive. So, I was just very, very fortunate to get that spot. I feel like that opportunity doesn't just, you know, come around easily. It was just kind of like right place, right time.
In the same way that when I say stuff like that, people are like, oh no, like you don't give yourself enough credit. Like obviously you had made enough of a name for yourself and did enough of those Lexi Gavin brand type things where you were out there and making content already and were just sort of a known person. And that's the advice I try to give people, is try to make yourself into a known quantity ahead of time. Write a blog, do a vlog. Anyone can make a vlog now. Anyone can write articles and post them on their website. Doesn't matter if 5 people read them. When Poker News goes, hey, we're looking for personalities this summer, you go, here's my website. It doesn't matter if you have 10 million views or 10 views. You just go, here's some videos. They go, okay, this person knows the business and they know what they already know how to make a video.
I'm going to draw a very obvious poker metaphor, which is you need to put yourself into a position to get lucky.
Right.
Like in a tournament, you basically just got to get to that point where you can survive a flip, as it were, because yeah, absolutely, talent will take you so far, but all of us can say with some certainty that so many things in our lives have come about of being at the right place in the right time, and it's that mixture of like skill and I guess variance which sometimes shines on us and sometimes doesn't. Well, this is getting a bit too philosophical for me.
No, that's absolutely true. Like, it's so true. They say, you know, the harder you work, the luckier you get. And just like the more you put out into the universe, the more it'll come back to you. So I like to think that I was working pretty hard, you know, with the vlog and the coaching and everything, that it was nice to kind of get recognized for that. Because I don't think I would have landed the Poker Night in America deal if it wasn't for the fact that I was putting myself out there.
So speaking of getting lucky, you have achieved something that not many people have in our industry, which is to have found a partner in the poker world who seems to fit in very well with your lifestyle and is also a poker player. And also you guys have this whole hashtag poker couple thing. as much as you are willing to share personal details of your life, just talk to me about finding love on the poker tour and making that work.
Yeah. I'm going to just start cheesing, because whenever someone brings up Bob, I just get super happy. So I am married to a poker player / private investigator, Bob Mather, who 2 days ago took down the seniors event at the Seminole Hard Rock.
Congrats,
super
Bob.
Super happy for him. Yeah. It was unexpected and the best thing to ever come out of poker, my poker career, for me. We were friends for a very long time. We met at the bike, you know, just playing, I think, the WPT or something. And, you know, it just, the summer of 2019, we just kind of fell in love at the World Series. And it's amazing. And I love that he doesn't do it full time. He doesn't play professionally. Because if he did, we'd probably be broke. And I'm joking. He's very, very good. I joke and I say he plays BTO, Bob Theory Optimal, because he just, he has his own unique style. But as a private investigator, the strongest part of his game is like reading people. And he's so next level with that he actually teaches me a lot. But it's a really good balance. He's, you know, older and he just sold his company, so he has a lot more time to travel with me. And yeah, it, you know, I've dated pretty much only poker players since I started playing poker, and it never worked out because they were all full time. I think that I found the sweet spot. You know, he loves to play practically full time hours, but doesn't rely on it.
It's surprising that you say it was 2019, because I feel like I ran into you at a poker night event in like 2017 or 2018, and we're having a conversation. Bob came up, and walked up, not came up in conversation, like okay. Walked up, and then you two were so fucking giddy around each other, and we were like, oh, clearly, like, you and Bob are a thing. And you're like, no, we're just friends. And then, like, lo and behold, years later, the two of you get married. It was, like, very clear to all of us, if it wasn't clear to you, that there was something going on there. One question about your relationship is that all the content, right? Like, people don't realize it takes a lot of energy to constantly put out content. And I know that, maybe it's sort of reducing yours and Bob's photos out traveling together as content, but it is, and it takes work to take photos and do videos. And who is the driving force behind that? Like, because I know when I'm with my girlfriend, I'm like, oh, I should probably do a video here, but ugh, who has the energy?
Yeah.
Which is it? Both of you? Is it one of you? Who's just like, all right, come on, let's go. We got to do a video. Let's get up. Let's go do this thing.
It's actually both of us. And what's really great is he pushes me to, he is the most supportive of my career, and he really pushes me to film and do this and do that and help me plan everything. So it's definitely a combination. We're a team. Like, I don't think I could have done it without him and without his support. And like, when we wake up in the morning, we'll just put on videos on how to be successful on YouTube, and we'll just constantly study together. So it's definitely a team thing. I think that my channel is as much his, because mm-hmm. he is a very big presence, and he, I might be the face, but he definitely helps me on the back end with things.
You can't have the sitcom without the wacky neighbor dropping by every once in a while. And that's Bob. He's your wacky
exactly. And I think that he's a big reason why the channel is successful, because some people just show up to watch him. So because he's very funny. That's his thing. He's just constantly making jokes, and he's just very funny.
He is a very funny dude. I like Bob a lot. I wanted to give you a chance, Lexi. So one of the things we do on this show is you have to play one of my stupid games. But before that, I wanted to give you a chance to talk about mastering small stakes, no limit tournaments. You're an author. You're a book. There you go. Yes, you've written a book. Speaking of...
I'm loving the cover photo, by the way. That is someone who knows how to master small stakes, no limit tournaments.
So yeah,
Thank you. Tell us about the book. I wasn't going to go with this one. It's funny. I wasn't going to go with this photo, but it's my dad's favorite photo, and I decided to go with that. I can officially call myself an author, which is mind-blowing. It is a book that I really wanted to nail down a transformation for people that, were struggling, breaking through that, struggling with profitability, struggling with like understanding the fundamental concepts. It's a little bit more basic, but it goes into some more advanced strategies. And I think, it was a lot of fun to write. I think that, the title Mastering Small Stakes Tournaments is a series that Jonathan Little is involved in. And I like that I was able to take snippets and study from players that I consider masters in the space. And so I actually learned a lot while I was writing the book. But it's great. It covers all of the fundamentals that you need. There's a lot of charts and stuff in it, and some personal experiences.
On a scale of 1 to 10, as far as like a beginner to expert poker player, what range of poker players should be buying this book? A total beginner?
You have to have an understanding of poker. And I am considering writing a book for people that have never played, kind of going through the rules. And it's a very, very basic book. But you have to have an understanding. So I would say like somewhere between a 2 and a 7.5 maybe eight, because there are some concepts in there, you know, that are pretty complicated, but it's definitely for the more beginner player.
Cool.
I get the impression that a decent percentage of regular poker players could probably benefit because, and this is the line I trot out all the time, the vast majority of people overrate their poker ability. There are so many people who think they're good at poker and don't realize that actually they are benefiting from variance going in their direction. And their tendency is to blame variance when they're playing badly and highlight their skill when variance is going in their favor. So sometimes it's important to take a look in the mirror and realize, yeah, I could work on my game. I could do some basic studying. Okay.
Yes, I have a whole section on ego and variance.
Oh, nice.
Excellent. Excellent. I have one last question, Lexi. I appreciate that live poker is booming, especially in North America at the moment, and the choice of where you can go and what you can play is so vast. But you were in Europe recently. I think you were at EPT Paris. So any more travel across the Atlantic on the horizon?
Nothing planned, but going to Paris and playing in the EPT was such an amazing experience that it definitely motivated me to play more overseas and more Stars events specifically, because I was so impressed with the structure of the tournament and just like how, you know, I play a lot of smaller buy-ins and, it, you know, sometimes it just feels like I'm dodging landmines left and right. And I didn't get that feeling with PokerStars events. Like I felt like it was I was able to realize my skill edge. So I definitely want to be playing more PokerStars events overseas, and nothing planned yet, but there will be more travel for
sure. It was cool seeing you guys there. I heavily associate you and especially Bob. Bob's very American. Bob's as American as it gets. So seeing him in Paris.
He was a cowboy. I don't know if you know that. Did you know he was raised on a ranch and he grew up a cowboy?
I mean, I'm not surprised. Like, I definitely did not know that. But if I had to guess, I'd have been like, yeah, that absolutely fucking tracks for Bob. So seeing Bob in Paris, Bob the cowboy private investigator in Paris, really tickled me. So I can't wait to see you guys in Prague or wherever else we go next year. I don't want to give anything away. But yes, it was great having you.
Yeah, for sure. It was so fun to be there. And just like 10 second story, one of the first times I had been to his house in Redding, California, which is where we now have a home. It was very early on in the relationship. I watched him rope a cow. Like,
whoa.
A cow had fallen down a cliff, needed rescuing. And Bob's like, I got it. So he took a rope and roped it. And I was like, okay, this is going to be my husband. Yeah.
Yeah. Competence is sexy.
I might have married Bob after witnessing this this maneuver. So I get it.
He got it on the first rope too. I couldn't believe it.
It sounds like a setup. Yeah.
That's so right, Leo. He planted the cow.
Yeah, get that cow down there, and I'm gonna drop the rope, throw it around the cow's neck real quick. Okay, Lexi, you've been an awesome guest. I feel bad now that I'm gonna have to subject you to one of my stupid games. This game's called It's All About the Lexingtons, and it's a trivia game about other things that go by Lex or Lexi or Lexington, and that's it. It's multiple choice, and I'll tell you what, if you win the game, if you get more right than you get wrong, I will buy 5 copies of your book and give them away to people in our Discord who might want to master small stakes in the limit tournaments. Here we go.
That'd be great.
Question number one. Lexington is the capital of which state? Is it Kentucky, Alabama, South Carolina, or Lexington is in Kentucky, but everyone knows the capital is actually Frankfort?
That.
That is correct. All right, you're on the board. You're on the board. I started writing that question and then Googled it, and I was like, oh, wait, Lexington is not the capital of any state.
That's hilarious.
I was like, I don't think it's a capital of anything, but okay.
I love the fact we discovered that. You didn't abandon the question. You just thought, I'll just go with the flow.
Exactly, exactly. All right. Question number two. What is the name of Lex Luthor's company from the Superman comic books? What is the name of Lex Luthor's company? Is it LexCorp, Lexonomics, Luther Industries, or Unprotected Lex? Get it?
I don't know. Lex Industries?
The LexCorp, right. Lexonomics, Luthor Industries are your choices.
Luthor Industries.
Luthor Industries is incorrect. LexCorp. We're looking for LexCorp there.
Man.
And I'm so sorry to give you a second comic book question, but I found this fact so interesting that I had to turn it into a question. In the 1986 comic book series Man of Steel, comic book creator John Byrne modeled a new Lex Luthor. This had never been done before, based on the amalgamation of four different personalities. The three of them were Donald Trump, Howard Hughes, Ted Turner. What was the fourth personality that went into this Lex character? Is it?
These are hard, right?
This is really hard, but this was so interesting to me that I had to include it. Was the fourth personality Blackbeard the Pirate, Thurston Howell the Third, Satan, or Mark Cuban?
Let's go with Mark Cuban.
Mark Cuban, not a thing in 1986. It was the fourth personality was Satan. Satan. Oh. Donald Trump, Howard Hughes, Ted Turner, and Satan.
Interesting.
All right, here we go. Jesus. It gets a little easier now. Here, it gets a little easier now.
Question. Yeah, I'm not a comic book person.
I know. I'm sorry to hit you with two comic book questions. All right, question number four. Which of the following cannot be found on Lexington Avenue in New York City?
I am a New Yorker, so I'm going to get this.
The Waldorf Astoria Hotel, the General Electric Building, the Vault-Tec Building, or the 69th Regiment Armory?
The Waldorf?
The Waldorf Astoria is on Lexington Avenue, as is the General Electric Building, as is the 69th Regiment Armory. The Vault-Tec Building is a made-up company from the video game Fallout and also now showing on Amazon Prime. That is what is not on Lexington Avenue.
You're running so bad. First comic books, now video games. I'm so sorry.
And now it's porn. Which famous Lex is a three-time Adult Video News Award winner and shares his last name with a Pierce Brosnan TV show? Are we looking for...
I thought it was supposed to be multiple choice.
It is multiple choice. Here we go. Ready?
Oh, okay, good. Yeah.
Basically, which one of these names is a porn star who's won three Adult Video News Awards? Is it Lexington Wood, Lexington Steel, Lexington Longfellow, or Lexington Hugecock?
Oh, God.
I'm assuming this name is a pun on the Pierce Brosnan TV show,
yes,
right?
I'm going to go... What was the third one?
Third one was Lexington Longfellow.
Don't worry about the
third
one.
We're going to go with that.
Wait, listen to your friend.
Don't worry about the third one.
All right, so Wood.
Or the first one.
Okay.
Wood?
I'm going to allow you to phone a friend, James Hardigan. James Hardigan here is going to help you out as a Pierce Brosnan fan.
Okay, so the clue is that shares a name with a Pierce Brosnan TV show, which was Remington Steel. Therefore, I'm deducing it's Lexington Steel.
Lexington Steel. We're going to give this one to Lexington Gavin Mather. Gavin, yeah, I got it right. Okay, that was a mouthful, but I got it right. Okay, so we've got two questions right. You can still win this game because there's two questions left.
But you have to run the board. You need to get both of the next two questions correct.
Okay. Let's
How many followers does Lexington Veldhaus have on Twitch? Is it 150,000, 290,000, 315,000, or 1.8 million?
And just to be clear, Joe, these are followers, right? So these aren't people who are paid subscribers.
That's
these are just people who at some point have chosen to follow for free.
Correct, yes. They click the like button on Lex on Twitch.
300, whatever it was.
315,000 is correct. All right, we're down to our final question.
Okay.
And I think you might be able to get this one. Actually, I'm pretty sure you'll be able to get this one, given what I just learned about your collegiate background. But I don't want to put too much pressure on you.
Okay.
The University of North Dakota's motto is Lux et Lex. What does that mean? Does it mean love and loyalty, light and law, lust for knowledge, or I'm loving it?
Light and law?
Light and law is correct.
Okay.
Lexi, Gavin Mather. You have won my stupid game. I'm going to buy 5 copies of your book and give them away to people in our Discord. I have to figure out how to do that. I'll tell you what, Discord people, if you genuinely want the book, the first 5 people who say they want it, I'll send you a copy, assuming I can send it through Amazon to whatever country you live in, because going to the post office and doing international shipping is not going to happen 5 times for me.
Thank
no
you
what.
So much. And I would really appreciate a review if you could leave a review.
Okay, sure. And leave a review for your free book.
If you hate it, don't worry about
right.
it. Oh, don't leave
I
a
always say this. Positive feedback only. Compliments only. Nothing. I do not need constructive criticism. Thank you.
Lexi, it's been an absolute pleasure to meet you finally. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me. This is a lot of fun.
So we're going to close out this week's podcast with Superfan versus Stapes and reintroduce ourselves to this week's Superfan, because as Joe mentioned at the top of this episode, she is a co-worker. Viviana Pazmino, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me here.
Vivi, I thought I was going to be so happy to have you on the show. You really are a super fan. You've always been so supportive, so fun to work with, so fun to chat movies and TV with. But you saddled us with one of the fucking hardest things I've ever had to watch. What happened to Star Wars? What happened to Marvel? What did I do to you?
Well, everybody told me, everybody chooses Marvel, Star Wars. I wanted to choose Lord of the Rings. They told me you did it already. So I thought this one, for sure, no one has done it. And maybe any Spanish one as well, because I wanted to bring something Spanish into this.
Okay, so I did appreciate watching something out of South America. I don't watch enough foreign films. I thought that part was cool. I didn't know I was going to watch a plane crash where people got their limbs snapped off and had to eat each other in like the first half hour. That was the easy to watch parts. It was frostbite.
But you didn't know anything.
I mean, I did like I. So I read the description of the movie, and I was like, "Oh, this sounds a lot like Alive," and yes. Everyone knows the story of Alive, the plane that goes down in the Andes, and everyone had to eat each other. And the more I'm watching, I'm like, "God damn it, this is Alive." Now, this is a good movie, but it is brutal. It is absolutely brutal. I mean, it's frostbite and limbs broken and infections and bed sores and starvation. I mean, it was rough.
Now, still, it's very great as well.
Well, look, I, as you know, Vivi, I don't really care about Joe, but with the brief interaction I've had with Patrick today, I think the poor boy is traumatized. So I think at some point I'm going to have to start giving him the right of veto over superfan subjects, because he has to watch everything. Obviously, in addition to yourself, Joe.
He's a sweet summer child. He doesn't deserve this.
So, Vivi, I should highlight, I think you are probably only the second or third colleague who has been on this show. Joe, the last time I think a member of the production team came on this podcast, it's when Graphical Hue made an appearance to talk about the movies of Tom Hanks.
So, yes, Vivi, as is tradition, now that I'm done yelling at you about the movie, why don't you tell everyone out there a little bit about yourself?
I'm from Ecuador. Maybe that's what I chose as well, the movie. I was born in Ecuador, but grew up in Madrid, live in London for 6 years now. I studied contemporary dance at uni, but I just like cameras, editing, so I ended up working in the media industry. And yeah, just anything that is tech-related. I've also worked for Poker Stars and Poker in the Years, especially for Poker in the Years. So that's what I've been looking for. Well, when I was working here in Poker in the Years, I was watching everything. But when I wasn't, then I was still a super fan outside of it. So
that's very kind.
Yeah, that's about me.
And you worked on the 300th episode with us. And what the live show at the Hippodrome? What was your job during the live show?
So during the Hippodrome event, I was in charge of getting Jake into the Zoom call with you guys.
And can you tell everyone what Jake Johnson said about me?
Well, we didn't talk about you.
But tell everyone what you told me about Jake Johnson.
No, he laughed a lot when he was listening to your stand-up comedy. He was having a very great time.
Yeah, because while he was waiting for a slot, he was watching some cat videos on YouTube.
Yeah, he was watching the Society of the Snow.
I don't think so. He will have been crying.
Well, as previously referenced, Patrick has watched the movie and compiled a 10-question quiz. Vivi, you have sat through this more times than anyone should have to, so you know the format. You know how it works. You know, yep. You have to give me a number between 1 and 10.
Yes, I know. I'm gonna go for number two.
Number two, okay. What city was the plane traveling from?
That was from Montevideo, Uruguay.
It was indeed, for 2 points.
So I do have a question before I move on here. Are people from Uruguay considered white people, or what are they considered?
Well, they're still Latino.
Okay, Latino. They're very European looking, you know, at least the actors in this movie. I will just admit right now, I hope there aren't a lot of questions about character names, because I couldn't tell any of the people apart in this movie. They're all just like generic, nice-looking men, you know, sports stars. So anyway, I'll pick my question now. Just wanted to get that out of the way. I know there was like a Nando. Question, let's go with snowmen's nom nom.
Number 8. Oh, you're going to get this one, Joe. In what year was the film released?
2023.
Correct. And we have a tied game, 2 points apiece. Vivi, you're up next. Round two.
If I got that wrong, that would have been so embarrassing.
Number 7.
Always coming. Oh, it's about characters. Joe, you faded this one. Which two characters venture out and eventually find life?
Are there any? Well, let me... You mean the ones that they got alive at the end, the one they had to cross the...
I believe the question means the guys that found the dude on the donkey by the river, or the horse, yeah.
Yeah, one was called Roberto, and the other one I don't remember now.
You do have the choices.
Okay, I get the choices then.
You do get the choices. Was it Numa and Tintin, Nando and Roy, Adolfo and Eduardo, or Nando and Roberto?
Nando and Roberto.
It was for 1 point. That was the only character that you could remember, Joe, right? Nando?
I did remember a Nando, yes. And there's a Numa also, but yeah. I don't remember like who lived it. Oh, that's the other thing, is 45 people go down, and at the happy ending, 17 people get out. Okay, moving on.
That's not a bad survival rate, all things considered. Just trying to put a positive spin on it. 1, 3, 4, 5, 6, 9, or 10, Joe?
You know what? I was going to pick 1, but the way you said 3 right there made it sound really appealing, so I'll take 3.
Okay. What city was the plane traveling to?
So it was going from Montevideo to Chile...
That's a country.
Santiago.
Santiago for 2 points.
All right.
Oh, you now have a 1 point advantage going into the third round. 1, 4, 5, 6, 9, or 10, Vivi?
Number 1.
What is the full name of the film's narrator?
The film's narrator? Ah, yeah. That's Numa Turu. One sec, let me think in Spanish, because I'm not going to remember it later.
You think in Spanish.
Trucati?
Correct.
Numa Trucati.
Whoa.
You do get the 2 points there.
Impressive.
Well done. 4, 5, 6, 9, or 10, Joe?
5, please.
Question number 5. The events of the film take place in what year?
1972.
For 2 points, and you still have that 1 point advantage as we go into the penultimate round. 5's gone, right? So yeah. 4, 6, 9, or 10?
9.
Question number 9. Joe's lucky number. Which specific body part does Numa get infected, which eventually leads to his death?
He was infected into his leg. I think it was the...
I'm going to need you to be more specific.
Okay.
I have a side of the body and a specific thing.
Okay. I think it was the left leg.
Would you like the multiple choice options?
Lower. Think in Spanish.
It was under the knee.
Give her the choice.
Are you sure you don't want the options? Okay. Was it his right? Was it his right arm, his left knee, his right foot, or his left hand?
Can you say them again? I don't know if it's the foot or the knee.
Okay, so the two that involve below the waist were his left knee or his right foot?
Right foot.
Right foot for a point.
Yeah.
Okay, Joe?
Remember, because he was such an idiot, he insisted on kicking, he got mad and kicked a window in and cut his ankle, and that would eventually kill him.
Oh, really?
But he saved them guys as well.
He was, yeah, but it seemed that people were telling him to stop, and he kicked through it. And anyway, yes, that's what eventually got him. At least in the movie. I don't know if that was dramatized or not. That's why sometimes these movies irritate me, because I'm like, is that really what happened? Anyway, okay.
And you find yourself spending far too many hours on Wikipedia afterwards trying to work out what was real and what was made up.
Exactly.
4, 6, or 10?
10, please.
On what day do the society eat the first human? I mean, we can't avoid the subject matter of the movie, can we?
No. I definitely have to take the choices for this one.
It's a number, by the way. It's not
a day
of the week.
Yeah. No.
Okay. Is it day 4, day 9, day 14, or day 21?
Oh, man. I think it's day 14.
It was actually day 9.
Day 9.
Yes.
So, tied game going into the final round. 4, 6, 6, 4. Those are your two options, Vivi.
4.
Question 4. What sport do the society play?
They play rugby.
They do, for 2 points. And Joe, the last question on the board is question number 6. I think you may have said this number already. Including crew members, how many people were on board the plane?
45.
Correct. So, tied game, which means we go to the tiebreaker. As you know, Vivi, it's a numerical answer. You can answer or you can let Joe answer, and then you take the over or the under. The tiebreaker is, what is the highest point in the Andes? What is the elevation of the highest point in the Andes? And I will accept the answer in meters or feet, because Patrick has very kindly provided both. So you can go for it if you know, or you can force Joe to answer the question.
I think I'm gonna force Joe to answer it.
Okay, Joe.
All right, the highest peak in the Andes, let's see, of the Mile High Club, that's 5,000 feet, and then there's going to be a couple more than that. Let's say 24,000 feet.
24,000 feet. Vivi, you can take the over or you can take the under on 24,000 feet.
How is, what's the meters equivalent for
that? Hold on, I'll pop that into meters for you, hold on.
Yeah, sorry, I have no idea about feet.
That's okay, it makes sense. That that is 7,315 meters.
I'm going to go lower.
I'm going to say that was a very, very good line, Joe, and very close to the actual answer, but it is slightly lower. It was actually 22,838 feet, 6,961 meters. So congratulations, Vivi. You win on the tiebreaker.
Whoa, nice
one. Thank you, guys.
Jeez,
you
know what?
I have a question, though.
Yes.
For Joe.
Yeah.
Did you cry in the movie?
Oh, you know what? I was thinking about that. I started crying, and then I stopped. Like, I didn't get there. Like, my eyes got, like, all stingy and watery. And then they, like, extra piled it on at the very end. So they go, like, whenever it gets rescued, like, I almost cried. And then when it shows them, like, how fucked up they are from it, even though they got rescued, then I actually did cry. So, yes. So it did get me. It was like I dodged the first one, and then the second blow just it took me out. So, yes, I didn't ugly cry in this one, but I did, in fact, shed a tear by the end of this movie. Yes. Good question, Vivi.
I did cry a lot.
Good.
Vivi, thank you very much for coming on today. Suffice to say, we've got your details, so it should be relatively easy for us to sort out your prizes.
Perfect. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me here.
All right, my babies, that's just about all the time we've got for this week's show. Coming up next time, it's our EPT Monte Carlo preview show, and I think we've got some fun things to announce.
Yes, and I believe that someone related to one of the fun things we're going to announce is likely to be the guest on next week's podcast. But notice how I'm hedging massively based on the experience that we've just gone through.
Yes, I would be very excited to announce next week's guest if we just didn't get fucked by something falling through this week. So I'm also not going to say the name, but trust me, y'all are going to be pretty excited about next week's guest.
I will say that, obviously, even though it was very tough to pull together the show at the last minute, Lexi was a delight, and it was fantastic to have her on the show. So it all worked out well in the end. One thing I can say with certainty is we will go over the streaming schedule, and we'll look ahead to what you guys are going to be able to enjoy on the PokerStars Twitch and YouTube channels from EPT Monte Carlo. When you said, by the way, it's our preview show next week, I can't believe that this event has come around so quickly. After Paris, it felt like we had a decent gap between Paris and... No. It's like literally days away now.
Yeah, I'm leaving. We're recording this on a Wednesday, and I'm leaving on Monday for that trip. So it is upon us. Super fans still need some of y'all to get involved, and I'm just going to say something right now. You're going to get moved to the front of the line if you pick something happy, because I'm fucking... No more cannibalism.
No.
For at least 3 weeks.
All I would say is that it's a light show. It's a fun show, and the super fan segment is meant to be a particularly light part of the show. And in all seriousness, it's a lot easier to do a quiz about a fun movie than about a serious, dark, depressing movie. So, yeah, I'm sure people will take that on board. But yes, we are still taking superfan applications for future weeks, for future episodes, dedicated channel on the PokerStars Discord server. Plus, we have the podcast discussion channel, which is not just for talking about Star Trek. It's for talking about all things related to this show. And of course, you can sign up to the PokerStars Discord server, courtesy of the link that we put in the podcast description. And I'm going to put a link to my YouTube channel for the second week running, because there's a new video coming out on Saturday.
Oh yeah, follow James's YouTube channel, like and subscribe, leave him a nice comment. No constructive criticism, praise only. And yes, that is all the time we have got for this week's show. Until next time, for James Hartigan, I am Joe Stapleton. Live long and prosper.